We have a good audience today. We appreciate your presence. Always good to have visitors and good to see so many of our home folks out also. I need to go ahead and tell you that the rest of this month, I'm going to wave at you as I pass. I have a meeting that will start next Sunday at Black Creek down west of Hueytown out near Alliance. I knew of that church many years ago and haven't been there since, so I'm looking forward to being back with them. So I'll be with them starting next Sunday through Friday. And then, of course, the next week is going to be our meeting here, except that because of Brother Adams not being able to give us a date early enough, we have a conflict. So I'm going to be in a meeting that week too, but I'm not going to be in the one here. I'm going to be in a meeting at Isbell, Lord willing. Isbell is near Russellville over in Franklin County, so I'll be preaching over there. And at the end of that week, Saturday, I'll come by and wave again. And then I'm going to London, Kentucky. I don't really enjoy it when I have three in a row, but sometimes the schedule just works it out that way. So, think of me. London, Kentucky, by the way, is where Roger Bruner, Doug Field's uncle, lives. So, Doug has been telling me about his uncle, so I'm looking forward to meeting his uncle and finding out some things about Doug. So I'm looking forward to being up there in London, Kentucky, in that meeting. Now, as you think about this, God makes a covenant with Israel. There are a couple of passages that I would like for you to bear in mind, and some points that I would like for you to sort of plan in your mind now to keep in mind as we go along through this study. In 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 11, Paul writes the Corinthians, "Now these things happen unto them by way of example." Now listen carefully. "Now these things happen unto them by way of example, and they were written for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the ages are come." Well, that's what Paul wrote to these Corinthians. And he was talking about a number of things that he had spoken of in the earlier part of chapter 10, things from the history of Israel. And so he was telling them these things were written for us, upon whom the ends of the ages are come, for our admonition. The other passage is Romans 15:4. Whatsoever things were written aforetime were written for our admonition, that through patience and through comfort of the Scriptures, we might have hope. Oh, that passage right there is so full of meaning, so full of thought. Through patience, hanging in there, and through comfort of the Scriptures. What the Scriptures promise us, what the Scriptures tell us, that's how we get the comfort. That's how we can succeed. Now, as we make this study, the thing that I would like for you to do, please, is I want you to be thinking about what I'm saying, but at the same time, I want you to be thinking of how these points are so true in the experience we have as Christians. So as we look at the principles involved in God's dealings with Israel, what I want you to be doing in the background of your mind, just be thinking all along of how many of these things are applicable to us in connection with the covenant that we have with God as well. In a previous study, we showed how God deals with men through a covenant, not through a whimsical, casual arrangement. Now then, you have heard this. Many of you have heard this before, but a lot of people have not. And especially people in the world out here have not heard this. And they need to know this, because this is, if they think of God at all, this is what they think. Now, you just have a whimsical, casual arrangement with God, and that's fine with God. And the fact is, no, it is not. It is not fine with God. Not only is it not fine with Him, He is absolutely not going to have that. So, if someone wants to get in close with God, it's going to have to be through, on God's terms, it's going to have to be by a covenant. We compared God's relationship to men in history as a marriage in which two become partners to a covenant, an arrangement in which things are agreed to by both sides. And that's the way it is with a marriage. Now, in this covenant of God, God is the one who dictated the covenant, who revealed the covenant, so that you and I don't have any input in determining what the covenant is. We can refuse to accept the covenant. We can accept the covenant, but we cannot have any input into what the covenant is or what the terms of the covenant are. All of that is already dictated and given by God. In this lesson, we want to see how God made a covenant with Israel. All right, so here we go. As the book of Exodus opens, Israel was in bondage, and they had been in bondage in Egypt for some time when God determined to rescue them. Notice some verses here. Notice closely, Exodus 2 and verse 23. Their cry came up unto God by reason of the bondage. Now, pretty well here, I'm going to have the passage on the screen, but you are welcome to turn back here to Exodus, and that way you can glance down if you need to. But I want you just to observe things very quickly as we go along here. First of all, notice that Exodus 2, 23 says, their cry came up unto God by reason of the bondage. So the Israelites were in misery. They were having a really hard time. And this is at the close of chapter 2. This is before God contacts Moses about going back and doing whatever. So it's important to note that as we see here, their cry came up to God by reason of the bondage. Now in chapter 2, verse 24, very next verse, first part, God heard their groaning. Now in these two sentences here, their cry came up unto God by reason of the bondage, and two, God heard their groaning. What we can see there is that God was aware of their suffering. I think that's good for us to know. He's aware of my suffering. He's aware of your suffering. He was aware of Israel's suffering. And secondly, He was compassionate with them. So far, what we've noted here is that God was aware of their suffering. He was compassionate with them. Now, a lot of times, as human beings, we look at this and we say, you can quit now. You can quit now. That's all I wanted to know. Well, I'm sorry, but that's not all you need to know. As human beings, we want to feel like God is sorry for us and He's going to do all kinds of stuff to get us out of our misery. But no, God has a lot more in mind for us than that. So He was compassionate with them. But note, this was not the chief reason why He did what He did. So I'm going to let that settle for a moment in your mind. See, He was compassionate, yes. He was aware of their suffering, yes. But that is not the main reason why He did what He did subsequently. So I wonder what the reason was. And God remembered His covenant with Abraham, with Isaac, and with Jacob. You see how that's in the very next half of the verse? So in the same verse, verse 24 alone, we have the point made of the compassion of God, but also the fact that God remembered His covenant with Abraham, with Isaac, and with Jacob. And when the Bible uses the word remembered in this sense, it does not mean that God said, "Oh yeah, I forgot. What was I thinking?" No, that's not at all what it means. When it is used, it's used of, for example, of Noah and his family on board the ark during the flood. And after they'd been on board the ark for a while, then it says, and God remembered Noah. Well, it doesn't mean that He'd slipped His mind, but it means that then God took steps to do something about it. That He had a plan, and He now seeks to advance the plan. So in Noah, in the case of Noah, it wasn't God's plan that Noah stay on the ark forever. So God remembered, meaning that He had a plan, and it was time to advance the plan. And so God remembered a covenant that He had made with Abraham, with Isaac, and with Jacob, and it's time to advance the plan. When God called on Moses to go and deliver Israel, He told him that he would bring them unto a good land and a large. Now we've moved into chapter 3 and verse 9. So he said, Moses, you go and tell the children of Israel that I'm going to bring them unto a good land and a large. In other words, when God was talking to Moses there in Exodus 3, as he was calling him and telling him to go down to Egypt, God wanted Moses to know that he was fulfilling his covenant with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, so that the God acting here in chapter 2 and chapter 3, God is acting because he had a covenant with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. He had an agreement with three men who were now dead. They were dead, but they lived. They were dead on earth, but they lived somewhere. And God still honored the covenant that he made with them, because living or dead, they were still going to have their covenant with God honored. So, God's covenant with Israel. God's covenant with Israel was a consequence of the covenant that he had already made with their forefathers. Now then, I'm moving to Exodus 6. All right, let me tell you now. In chapters 3 and 4 is where God speaks to Moses at the burning bush. Tells him to go down to Egypt. So Moses goes down to Egypt. And in chapter 5, he presents the demands of God to Pharaoh. Let my people go. Pharaoh says no. He turns and afflicts the children of Israel with even more rigor. And the children of Israel are thoroughly discouraged. Moses and Aaron are thoroughly discouraged. Now in chapter 6, God speaks to Moses again to try to cheer him up, try to perk him up, so that he can then go and perk the children of Israel up. But as we read along, it's pretty hard to perk anybody up at this time. Sometimes God has a hard time perking people up. And you and I look at it and say, well, why couldn't they? Why couldn't they? Well, why couldn't they what? Why couldn't they believe God? Why couldn't they trust God? Do you know what question we need to ask? Why can't we trust God? Why can't we believe God? If we could do those things, then we could also avoid the turmoil of heart and spirit that the Israelites were experiencing here. But it's important to note that his covenant with Israel was a consequence of the covenant that he had already made with their forefathers. Look at what he says now. I appeared unto Abraham, unto Isaac, and unto Jacob. Chapter 6 and verse 3. And then the next verse. And I have also established my covenant with them to give them the land of Canaan, the land of their sojournings wherein they have sojourned. Now I want you to notice how in 6, 3, and 4, he is referring to what he had already promised to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. I'm going to give this land, give them the land of Canaan, the land of their sojournings. But what he is telling Israel is that I'm going to bring you unto a land that is good and large. So do you see how one covenant here leads to the next? As we showed earlier, God's compassion for Israel played a part in this. So it was both his compassion for the people and his intention to form a relationship with them that moved him to take the present action. Now that's not hard. You just need to think about it and actually see how simple it is. The compassion of God for Israel and his intention to form a relationship with them. That's what was at work here. And as is usual the case, the Israelites hardly had a clue about what was going on in the world. They hardly had a clue about life. But God knew exactly what he was doing. And he was saying, I have compassion for these people. And I want to make a relationship with them. And you and I, you know, I guess we tend to think like the Israelites. The Israelites would have said, God has compassion on us. Wow, are we lucky? He's going to get us out of this bondage. Getting them out of their bondage was not the best thing God was going to do for them. And that's one of the points we need to understand. That getting them out of their bondage was not the best thing God was going to do for them. The best thing He was going to do for them was He was going to form a relationship with them. That was the greatest thing that He was going to do for them. Exodus 6:5, "And moreover, I have heard the groaning of the children of Israel, and I have remembered My covenant." Therefore, God planned to bring them out from under the burdens of the Egyptian. Now, in that verse 5, He puts them both together. The idea of the compassion and the idea of the covenant. I've remembered My covenant. So they're together in that verse. So God planned, therefore, to bring them out from under the burdens of the Egyptians. "And I will take you to Me for a people, and I will be to you a God, and you shall know that I am the Lord your God." Now the plagues follow in chapter 7 on through chapter 12. And so here the plagues are that occur. And during the time the plagues are coming upon Egypt, the Egyptians are learning who God is. Pharaoh is learning who God is. And so God has Moses, "Now tell the people, I will take you to Me for a people." Now take a moment here and put this all together. For verses 5, 6, and 7. "I have heard the groaning of the children of Israel, and I have remembered My covenant. Therefore, I am going to take them and bring them out from under their burden, and I will take you to Me for a people, and I will be to you a God, and ye shall know that I am the Lord your God." Now that's the plan. All right, so in chapter 7 through 19, God delivered Israel from the Egyptians and brought them to Mount Sinai. In those chapters, Exodus 7 through chapter 19, we find God at work doing this. He delivers Israel from the Egyptians and He brings them to Mount Sinai. Now, by the time they get to Mount Sinai, I want you to notice these points. By that time, God had become a constant, mighty presence in the life of Israel. Now, for a moment, I want you to go back to what you know about Abraham. Would you say that God became a constant, mighty presence in the life of Abraham? Yes. Would you like God to be a constant, mighty presence in your life? We say, yeah. That's exactly what God has in mind. That's what He did with Abraham. That's what He did with Isaac. That's what He did with Jacob. And what I'm telling you is, that's what He was doing with Israel. He had become a constant, mighty presence in the life of Israel. First of all, through the plagues which He did in their sight. And then as He distinguished between whether these plagues affected the Israelites and the Egyptians or only the Egyptians. He became a constant, mighty presence in the life of Israel through the crossing of the Red Sea. As He told Moses, "Stretch out the rod that's in your hand over the water." And that's what He asked Moses to do. Moses could do that. That wasn't beyond Moses' ability. And then Israel was to use their feet and walk across the Red Sea. And God was the one that was going to divide the waters. Now, of course, it didn't take one little iota, just the tiniest little bit of God's power to do that. But before Israel and before Egypt, there was no God who could exercise power like that. What a display of power. And those waters were divided. God didn't have any trouble dividing the waters. And Israel didn't have any trouble walking across. And Moses didn't have any trouble holding the rod out. So God was letting Israel know, hey, I am here. I am here. A constant, mighty presence. Also, by the constant intervention on His part, without which they could not have survived at all. Over and over, a constant, mighty part of their lives. There were the waters of Marah. They came to those waters, and the waters were so bitter they couldn't drink them. And God told Israel to cut a certain shrub or tree down and throw it in the water, and it made the water where they could drink it. There was the manna in the wilderness of Sin. They had no food. What are we going to eat? We need bread. And as Moses told them years later in Deuteronomy 8:13, God humbled you and suffered you, or Deuteronomy 8:11. God humbled you and suffered you to hunger and fed you with manna, which you knew not, neither did your fathers know, that you might know that man does not live by bread alone, but by everything that proceeds out of the mouth of God doth man live. God was there, and every day the manna was there, except on the Sabbath. Every day the manna was there. God was there, a constant, mighty presence in the life of Israel. God was there when they had no water at Rephidim. And He told Moses to smite the rock, and Moses smote the rock, and God caused water to come forth from that rock. A stream, a mighty stream of water that a large nation and all of their animals and so on could drink from. There was the battle with Amalek, and God delivered Amalek into their hands. And here's a passage that I want you to look at. And I don't think I have it on the screen. Exodus 13. I want you to read a passage here. Here's the point. The constant presence of God as a pillar of fire at night and a cloud by day. Now that's the point. I don't want to read this passage. And what I'm telling you is that God had become a constant, mighty presence in the life of Israel, but there's been no covenant made yet. God has been introducing Himself to Israel. He has been asserting Himself as a God who now acts on the behalf of Israel. I say again, no covenant yet. But first, God is establishing Himself as a presence in Israel. So now let's read these verses. Exodus 13, 21 and 22. And the Lord went before them by day in a pillar of cloud to lead them the way, and by night in a pillar of fire to give them light, that they might go by day and by night. Now here's the verse that I want you to notice. The pillar of cloud by day and the pillar of fire by night departed not from before the people. Now that's how we know that every day there was the pillar of cloud. Every night, there was a pillar of fire that hovered over that camp. The people would have had to shut their eyes and close their ears for God not to be a mighty presence in their lives. And yet, it is during this very time that the children of Israel will utter statements like Exodus 17 and verse 7 at Rephidim. Is the Lord among us or not? How could they say that? But they could, and they did. But God was establishing Himself in their presence. And you see, He brings them to Mount Sinai, and by the time they have arrived at Mount Sinai, see, what I want you to see is, by the time they arrive at Mount Sinai, it is not a matter of who is God. No, it's not a matter of who is God. Who is this God? He's not a stranger to Israel anymore. He has shown them who He is. And so now, He offers His covenant to them. Turn to Exodus 19, if you'll just have that passage before you here. It would be convenient for you, I think, even though I'm probably going to have most of the words upon the screen. Do you kind of get the idea now that this is a big thing? We've really built up a tremendous amount of things have happened. But we've reached the climax. Yes, this is the climax. There before Mount Sinai, children of Israel all encamped at the foot of the great mountain. And now God offers His covenant. You have seen what I did unto the Egyptians, and how I bare you on eagle's wings and brought you unto Myself. Now a few points. God had manifested His presence, His awesome power and majesty through His conflict with the Egyptians. You have seen what I did unto the Egyptians. He had shown His love, and concern for Israel. You have seen what I did unto the Egyptians, and how I bare you on eagle's wings and brought you unto myself. Those are the points that he's made now in that verse. If you will obey my voice indeed and keep my covenant, then ye shall be mine own possession from among all peoples, for all the earth is mine. Now then, notice these points also very carefully. Israel already belonged to God because all the earth is mine. But Israel was going to become a special possession of God because of the covenant that was about to be made. You know, I think about it like this. Suppose there was a man who was the ruler of a kingdom. And he is a king in the old sense of the absolute ruler, has total power over the lives of everybody. So here's the king, he's ruling over all of his people. All of those people are his people. They belong to him. But as this man looks about, he finds this young lady that he decides he will make his wife. She will become his queen. Isn't she already his? Yeah, she's already his because she's part of the kingdom. But when she becomes his wife, she will become his in a special way. Do we see that? And so here is God who says, all the earth is mine, but you are going to be mine in a special way. You are going to be a special possession. All right? Now here's something else. Notice, if you will obey my voice indeed, that part of that verse 5. All right, notice this point. Being God's people is not here presented as a blessing, though it is one. It is presented as a calling, as a responsibility that would require special behavior and conduct for it to be so. I think that's one of the most important points that we need to note as we compare this whole thing with you and me. That yes, it was a blessing that God was going to give the children of Israel. But when he said, if you will indeed obey my voice, what he was emphasizing there is that this that I'm doing is it's a calling. It is a responsibility. And it will require special behavior and special conduct for it to be so. And if the special behavior and conduct are not there, then it will not be so. And that's something else that you and I must be most careful to understand. Without Israel's willingness to walk fully in God's ways, this calling could not be realized. Because it was that walk that would distinguish Israel and set them apart from the other nations. Now, does everyone see that? It's simple, and yet I don't think it just readily occurs. But when you think about it, it is so logical and it is so simple. Israel was going to have to promise that, yes, we will indeed obey your words. We will for sure keep your commandments. That would be their way of acknowledging that we must walk as you direct, because it is the walk that's going to set us apart. And he said, you shall be unto me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. Though Israel would have a special priesthood to intercede for them through sacrifices, they were to present their own lives as a sacrifice to God by walking in his ways. That's what he meant. And it makes you think, doesn't it, of the statement of Paul in Romans 12, verses 1 and 2. Brethren, I beseech you by the mercies of God, present your bodies a living sacrifice unto God, holy, acceptable to him. They would be a holy, a special, a dedicated people. As they absorbed the character of God through His teaching, through the law He was about to give them. That's how it would be done. The world has a sort of some kind of an imaginary idea that, you know, I use certain key words, I use certain little words, they may become cliches, and I use all the right terms, praise the Lord, or something like that. And that makes me a child of God. No, the thing that was going to make Israel the special children of God, the holy children of God, the dedicated, the special children of God, was the way they were going to walk. And the way they were going to walk was going to be in accordance with that revelation which God was just about to give them, that law which He was about to reveal, the Torah. The Torah. That's what the Jews called it. And when the Jews used that name Torah, they were emphasizing the fact that the law consisted of rules which were to become principles, which were to be planted in the minds and the hearts of the people, which were to become a part of the lives of the people, so that the lives of the people and the character of the people would all be transformed and renovated by that revelation from God. And so tonight, Lord willing, we will continue with the making of the covenant. But already, this morning, we have already looked at a number of principles that you and I need to understand. They're absolutely vital to our succeeding in being Christians. We've related a number of these points to the New Testament ideas that are presented by the inspired writers as well. And we will continue to do that this evening as we see God making His covenant with Israel. We hope you can be back again this evening for our worship. We appreciate your being here this morning. If you're not a child of God, well, you know, look at where you are. You are in the position of Israel who was being offered a covenant. You are offered a covenant. The covenant has already been provided. Do you want to be a part of it? That's what it is. The covenant's already been made. It is a matter, do you want to be a part of it? If so, then you have to enter into a relationship with God. You have to take upon yourself a calling, a responsibility. That's what it is. If you will believe that Jesus is the Son of God, turn away from sin, one of the most vital parts of this whole thing. Confess your faith and be baptized to have your sins forgiven. Then you can be a child of God. And then walk in His ways and be faithful and serve Him. If you are a child of God, but you have not been faithful and you have turned away from God, repent and come back to the Lord and make your life right again. If you're subject to the invitation of Jesus Christ, we invite you to come as we stand and sing.